Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
The specialists are back, and we are here recapping Deal or No Deal Island episode number 9. After tonight, or after last night, we're now down to just 5 players remaining to be the banker's ultimate competition. We just saw the greatest deal in the history of Deal or No Deal, and it was a bad deal. And that is the flaw of this game, and I can't wait to talk about it. Will, at least somebody went home tonight. At least there was no cop-out, even though Rob and Aaron were in trouble of going home. I know you were low on last week's episode. How did you feel about this week's in comparison?
This was definitely much better, but there's still, I feel like the more we watch this show, the more ways you can figure out how they can rig the game the way they want it to go. And that's not even saying they know it's inside someone's case, but they can basically offer deals by looking at the split of cases. And like, if you give someone a deal where it's like 5 out of 6 times they're going to make a good deal, they're always going to take it. And if you do the opposite, which we saw early in his first deal, they're not going to take it. Mm-hmm. And then there's also this question at the end of these games: are you down to 2 cases or 3 cases? Because if you have 2 cases remaining in your case you first selected, then you know no matter what the deal offered is, it's going to be 2 on one side, 1 on the other. And you can either have the odds in your favor or not, and your decision's kind of made up for you. Here we saw it where it's basically just 2K, the one he has, the one that Nick had, and the one last one remaining. And of course, you can get there if you're down to like 3 total and then you open 1. Yes, you can still get to 2. Only 2 cases remaining. He didn't even have that chance. I mean, this was like, we're just going to go 50-50 coin flip. And so they can, depending on who's playing, can enact a little bit of like, at best, we're going to give you a 50-50 shot here. That's what they gave to Nick. They never gave Nick the 66.6% chance. They never gave him like a 70% chance or even like a 55%. This was like, best we're going to get to get to the end.
75% chance to lose at one point.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was
the only thing. He had to say no deal. But yeah, we've seen before, even if they're, hey, there's 7 cases left and it's 4-3, but you know what? The 4 is in your favor, so take the deal. Like, he never got a chance to go above 50 here. And so it's smart of him, hey, just take it to the end and do what you got to do. But I guess I'm okay with that. I mean, it doesn't
That's
bother
the game
me.
It feels like yeah. Them, yeah.
But it does just feel like, it just feels like there's another player here. And it is the banker and how the banker plays. And we know the banker is essentially just a TV show. And just the more we've gone through this, it just feels that, okay, you got to beat the banker. You got to beat the show if you're not one of the characters. Like Rob, I do feel like if Rob or Aaron play here, they're getting a different format of the game where they are going to get down to three and they're going to get offered something where it's two out of three chances they're safe.
The thing that sucks though is if you have the highest value case, like let's say you had five, if he had the 5 million, because he had what, 4.5 million here. So he had the second highest value case. The thing that sucks is if you get one of the two highest value cases, you are literally never allowed to take a deal. And so I actually feel like it's disadvantageous to have a higher value case because
you want a low case.
You want a low case
through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so 100%. You saw that here tonight. Like it was pretty brutal for poor Nick, who had the second highest case available. And so there's really no way for him to beat this game. Now, here's where I was a little confused as to what happened and what took place. And maybe you can give me some insight. There was dialogue at the end of this where he was saying, number nine's been good to me so far, so I'm not going to let, I'm going to stick with number nine. And then he says, no deal.
Yeah, that was weird.
No. Then he said deal. That's what it was. Then he said deal. He should have said no deal and kept his case.
Mm-hmm.
But instead confusing. He said deal and took the other. So part of me was like, how did that make any sense? And then, my rigging brain starts going off and I'm like, did they tell him? Like, no, man, like you have to take the deal.
No, I don't think they told him to do it.
I know. I'm being.
I think he was like, you know what? This case has gotten me this far. Number nine, you know, it's still one of these, it's still a big case, but you know what? I got to take this deal and hope for the best. I mean, something to that. It was weird they included that. That did jump out to me.
Because as an audience member, it really made no sense. No,
I was confused.
Absolutely none.
I was confused. I don't know how you leave that line in or don't explain what the whole thinking was there.
Yeah.
It's funny. I'm here on the Deal or No Deal podcast. I've missed the last two Survivor podcasts. Unfortunately, I'm going to miss the next two just with other things going on and priorities. And I'm going to Hawaii. I'll be in that plane tomorrow, I think, while you're recapping Survivor. So anyone who's coming in and said, hey, where's Will on the Survivor podcast? I just haven't been able to do it. And then literally my flights are Wednesday and Sunday, which are two podcast days. And that was kind of the only way I can make the trip work. To go, I'm going to the Lost 20th anniversary celebration concert, all that. So it should be good. But I'm just saying, I miss everyone here on the podcast, and thank you for listening. And I'll be back to Survivor soon enough. Alexa did an incredible job filling in, and I don't know who's going to be there this Wednesday. I was really sad to miss Caleb. That was great. You did a great job with that, Phil. But I'm happy to be back, even though it's Deal or No Deal Island that I'm now making, you know, the next day podcast for, but I can't squeeze in Survivor, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, by the way, Alexa's video almost has 5,000 views, Will. You got to get your shit together, mm-hmm. bro. You got to get your shit together. Yeah.
We got to get this Deal or No Deal Island video up.
Yeah. You think we'll get this to 5,000? Hey, our last three have all hit 1,000, so people have clearly started to care a little bit more. Although, I do feel Deal or No Deal Island is interesting to me because I don't feel that I'm getting more and more amped for the finale the closer we get to the finale. I feel like a show like Survivor, yes, you love the chaos of the merge, you love the chaos of like Final Seven, but as it starts getting to the finale, you're like, all right, is somebody able to pull out these wins? What's going to happen at Final Four Fire Making? Are there going to be any last second idol plays, anything like that? Whereas as we're getting closer to the end of Deal or No Deal Island, I'm like, okay, I'm starting to yawn a little bit here, guys. Like I'm starting to get a little tired of the format. Like I don't know. I just feel like it's lost its luster. Plus, the Night Owls were just the cheese balls, man. I mean, it was just, it's so like hearing the Night Owl noise after we heard so little from all of them.
Oh my God. They really hammed up that noise this episode too.
It drove me crazy, man. It really did. I don't know why it bothered me so much in this episode, but then what ended up happening was when Nick goes up, so Alyssa's already been eliminated. When Nick goes up for the Deal or No Deal segment of this game, I was like, I know Nick is losing because there's no way the guy who takes out Boston Rob is going to be as minor on this season as Nick was. And sure enough, Nick lost. Who would have thought? So I don't know. Like, I feel like they're going to do a better job in season two. Season two is definitely going to happen, even if it hasn't been officially renewed. I mean, they have their casting stuff out. People really care. But I just, I don't know, man. We'll see what ends up happening and how they edit it differently. Maybe the types of games and things like that. Maybe even how they try to spice up the deal or no deal portion of this, because I still feel like Nick should have gotten some sort of reward. Like, it should almost be, if you end up with three of the top five cases at the end or something, it can't be a bad deal. Like, there should almost be a buffer.
Or like a threshold. Like, you need to make a deal that is at least this high. And if you don't, too bad, you go home. And so
he just made a deal for $4,417,000 or whatever it was, and he loses and gets no benefit from that. Like, that's crazy when you think about it.
Yeah. And I, someone in the comments for our last recap was doing some expected value calculations with what the banker's offering and how it works and with the personal offer. And I replied back, and this is, I think, relevant here. This whole deal or no deal money for these games is completely made up. It's not real money. This is not a actual prize pool. This is not a real fund. This money is not tangible in any way. So, like, the personal offer of $100,000 had no kind of consequences towards, you know, expected value and all that. So I think, and actually this episode even confused me more on what the final case is, because now, I don't know if you picked up on this, Phil, Joe is saying, you know, the winner will get to play for the final case is what he said, which, okay, if the case is in there, you know, it's one of 20 cases or one of 16, 12 cases. Sure, I guess you are playing for technically a chance to get that case. You know, it's one of 16 numbers and you have a 1 in 16 chance of grabbing that case and saying no to every single deal. Sure, but the way he said it was almost like that's the prize pool. But if it was the prize pool, they would have made that way more clear from the start, that this is, you're playing to win this amount in the case. But the players are almost acting like that is the case.
Whatever the case may be.
I'm going, I'm going to that location. I'm gonna go swimming there. Nice. That's episode, what did we say, 11?
13? 11, 12? That's a Kate episode.
Kate's second episode, yeah.
Yeah, Kate's
second. No, that's one of the places we're going to go visit and hang out.
It's right, yeah. I think it is 11. It's right before Hearts and Minds and Special.
It's been before those. I'm very confused with this final case, and it's so weird to me that we're this far into it. We don't know how it ends, in like the verbiage of talking about this case and its importance and the reactions from the players. Like, are they just being produced to go, oh my God, or yes, like, we need to add this to the case. Like, cause it, like, they don't even know what the deal with the case is. I don't think, like, if we don't know, they surely don't know. Right. Like, it's,
no, I agree with you.
It's more interesting if we know and they don't, then why would you give the players information and not give that information to the audience? So, like, I'm so confused on what this final case is meaning. So I don't know. It's not real money.
I want to say like, so somebody had posted, it's like Survivor Quotes over on Twitter. They had posted the other day, the first monologue from Survivor Borneo, or it's like, it's not when they're clearing off the boat. It's the first one Jeff is doing, I guess, after they clear out the boat, when they're getting and paddling to shore. And Jeff is sitting there on the boat and he is saying, the rules of the game state that every 3 days, somebody will be voted off the island and the team will win immunity and this will happen. And this, Jeff literally outlines every single rule of Survivor in that moment. I get most TV shows don't do that anymore in their premiere, but why not?
No, they do. Most shows.
Deal or No Deal Island didn't.
No, I know. They just said you're going to play Deal or No Deal against who's the banker's number one competitor. And
the traders didn't do it.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't explain the end game.
They didn't explain if there could be more traders coming in. They just say that there's traders amongst you. You're trying to find them. True. They didn't say that more traders would come in. I feel like Deal or No Deal Island would have benefited from that.
Yeah, I feel like in terms of like the cycle of a show, like what your week-to-week format is, I feel like most shows give you, you know, each morning with the traders, you know, or each night the group will banish someone and then any remaining traders will murder someone that night. And that will be our like daily routine without talking about like the circle of fire of trust or whatever they do at the end. And I think that's okay. Like, I don't think you need to spell out your ending always.
But you should spell out exactly what the players are playing for. And right now we don't really know that on a game that is all right. about what are the players playing for.
Right. And I think it's like okay with the traders because they were up front with okay, here's the prize money or contributing it together in a challenge. And like what they kept from us in the first season of that was like, how are we determining a winner? How are we getting down to the end? But we still knew like what the goal of the game was. Like here, the final case is such an integral part of the episode that they bring up and they hit it over, like hit you on the head with it each week. So like they're assigning so much importance to this final case without telling us why it's important. Mm-hmm. Like I get that it's going to have a really big role in the end game of this show, but I don't know what that role is. And I don't think the players know what that is. So it is leaving me like, is that the prize pool? Is that what they're playing for? Like if they win against the banker in the last, like whoever wins the show and they're going to play Deal or No Deal. And like, they just have to make a good deal and they win that case. The money in that case, or is that case one of 20 cases?
I think it's one of 20 cases. Yeah. Like
I don't know. Is it one of 12 cases? Is it one of 16 cases? If they
play this game where if you're just trying to make a good deal and then you win the final case amount, I think that would be fine. I think that would be clear. And then if you lose it, you get whatever you get a lower amount. Maybe you get whatever's in your case, and maybe the cases are at least 100,000 and at most 1 million. Or something along those lines, even if it's less, even if it's from 10,000 to 100,000, whatever, it doesn't matter. But I think that is a better version of the ending of this game, whereas I think that this case is just going to be one of the cases. And we saw tonight in this episode, and I keep saying tonight, it is literally Tuesday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, East Coast. So I don't know why I keep saying tonight, but you all know what I mean. We saw in this latest episode, the $5 million, which they brought out, meant nothing because it was the first case Nick pulled. So, like, if that's the case, if that can happen in the finale, that's going to be a rough finale. And I mean, obviously, we're speculating on something that could not happen. But if I was doing season two of this show, I would create a threshold that if you make a deal over a certain amount of money, you are safe. Maybe you're not allowed to eliminate still. Maybe that's how they find their non-elimination legs. Or maybe then, like, there's a different way. Like, you know, in the Amazing Race, they have the speed bumps or something. Maybe there's a different way. But I think there should be a threshold where somebody like Nick doesn't go home when he makes this type of deal. And I do think that potentially, we don't know exactly how it's going to end yet, but I think that there should be more involved with that case is what you're playing for. And if you don't get that case, you're getting the amount that's in your case or whatever you make the deal for. But you're trying to make a good deal at the final game because it seems that's going to be one of the cases. And then what did we watch 9 episodes of this for as they built up that case?
I mean, I'm not going to sit here and hate on the mechanic of the final case until I see how it works. I'm just sitting here this deep into the show, confused on how it works. And I don't think that should be the case. Again, the case. I think we should know how it works.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't need to know every little nitty gritty detail of like, okay, at final three, they do this and then they go down to two and then the banker has a game and they do a prisoner. Like, I don't need to know every little single step, but like the amount of time we spent talking about the importance of this case for us not to understand it is just kind of bizarre to me.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I do agree. Let's talk about the challenge though. Let's talk about that. That's a little bit more important here. Maybe. What did you think about this one? You weren't a big fan of last week's. What did you think of this one?
I like this one. I thought this one was interesting. I liked how they all, like the maps, they had all basically perfect information, except which red case was steel and which red case was going to be the lowest valued case. So I liked it wasn't just, I hope this is a good one, even though we did see that with Rob again. Mm-hmm. And map reading challenges are always good. Usually you get at least one person, you know, getting the map wrong. And yeah. I mean, once Rob can, okay, second from the right, I mean, I understood, I would understand what he meant, mm-hmm. but like, I don't know. I would have just like, if you want to be super clear, plus they had all the time in the world at this point, he had already picked the case. There was no going back and swapping it out. Like they weren't allowed to reveal it early. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, do you risk getting another case that might be lower? Or are you happy with what you got? So they had all the time in the world to be like, I like Rob could point at the map and be like, I got, let me just look at the map. I could just tell you.
Yeah.
Unless he was there, he could have just looked at the map himself and he would have seen he got the $5 million case. And then in that situation, their goal, I mean, at that point, if they were to get the steal, they would steal the highest value and both of them would become safe. Because I did think it was interesting that their goal was to end up in the middle. Whereas if I'm Aaron and Rob, if I have a chance to be the top, then give me the top, right?
Well,
like that's where you ideally want to be. Because
they were scared if they got the top, people would steal from them, which drops them to the middle, which puts them at risk of elimination. If they get the bottom, then they could steal, but they might not be able to, like, but they might not be able to get, they want it to be top. They want it to be, what did they want? They want it to be middle. Yeah. Because then if you get the bottom, you are putting yourself in position where you could steal, but still not have enough money to be the top. They were trying to be in the middle to avoid the middle. If that makes sense.
No, I thought they wanted to be on the bottom. Yeah, they wanted to be on the bottom.
So they could play the game at least.
So that they could play the game. They think they felt that their chances were good against the dealer, which, hey, I kind of agree with them. Like if either of them are playing, I think they're getting a different setup of cases and at points where we get deals, different percentages. So maybe kudos to them for figuring that out. I do think going for the red case is the right decision because if you get the steal, then you're able to, you know, steal hopefully more money, and then you're giving that lower value case, putting other people in the bottom. And then if you don't get the steal, you get the lowest value like they did, then you should be able to have a case. your second case should be able to be small enough where it doesn't put you into second place. Unfortunately, Rob got just by chance the highest case value. So they did do a good job at executing their plan of getting to the bottom had they not randomly pulled the $5 million case. So I liked that even during the steal, the teams would have been allowed to talk to each other and say, hey, I can tell you the value of this case. I liked that the teams all knew the value of their own cases. And so that it really could have played out. Like if Rob and Aaron had gotten steel, I think it would have been really interesting to try to, it would have been one of those like reading games where we kind of already saw it's like, which case has more money in it? Like I got to steal one of these. And like, do we go for the top now? Or hey, I know this is a low value case. Maybe I can just play for the bottom. I don't know. I like when these challenges offer decision-making. So
I hadn't thought about that because they revealed the steal and the million first. And then the person who was stealing, then the team that was stealing then had to determine what they were going to steal. And
right. Without knowing,
without knowing what was in that it. Was good. I hadn't thought.
And then you're like, what would that have? What was this team trying to do? And then, that two of the teams were kind of working in cahoots with each other. So like, and Rob and Aaron figured it out. They said, one team wants to go to the top, one team wants to go on the bottom to put us in the middle, and that would basically screw us over because I think what the win rate on Deal or No Deal is two-fifths.
I wanted to throw this up here, Will, as you were talking. You can keep going. This was just this was what I was thinking of with Rob and Aaron because we keep saying it's a coin flip game, but do we really want to watch them flip coins? They got the two-face thing going on. I don't feel like it's a coin flip for them. It's a coin flip for everybody, but I don't feel like it's a coin flip for them. And like you said, maybe they do have better odds. They make their own odds. I just had to throw this up because that's what it reminded me of. And I do feel like this is how Rob and Aaron are currently playing the game, is they're playing it as Two-Face Harvey Dent with their double heads, and they know what they're going to be picking every single time. So yeah, I'm not that they necessarily know, but that they might be playing with heads most of this game.
Well, I mean, we're pretty deep into this now. We know that out of the people who have played, you're more likely to win against the banker than to lose. This is the second time we've seen somebody lose.
Yeah, I think so.
Like we're not including the personal offers.
Yeah, because the personal offers, I mean, there's no guarantee you would have won or lost. So who knows?
Yeah. So, I mean, I was a fan of this challenge just because, I mean, I don't think running out into getting cases on ropes, or you're running through the jungle collecting cases, I mean, maybe that's getting a little stale, but to me, the most interesting part was the strategies and decisions behind it all. And then, the walkie thing, I actually thought when Rob's and Aaron stopped working, once they got to the second location, that potentially that's when the walkies went out of range, and then you'd have to run back into range. Like, I'm losing you. This is how far the range works. And then you have to then figure that out, go get it. And then, you know, Rob's running back, right? Because his walkie's out of range to get in touch with Aaron. Nick's running forward. Nick gets there. He sees all the cases, realizes, wait, he can't talk to Stephanie. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, then Nick has this decision. Do I just pick a case at random and try to beat Rob? Because Rob's coming back with information from Aaron. This obviously did not play out. Just, I thought that was an interesting scenario if they put one of the locations out of range of the walkie so that you had this decision. Do I go back and get information, or do I say, screw it, let me just take something before someone else comes that does have information? That would have been an interesting dilemma.
I can't believe I'm going to say this to you right now, but The Amazing Race actually just had a really interesting thing like this, where there were three stations at a place where you had to line up meet in a specific location on a diagram. So there was the place where you would watch the demonstration, and then you would run over to another room and you would line up the meet. There were five teams there. Two of them weren't in the alliance. The other three were. So the two teams that weren't in the alliance were at the table. They're putting it together, and then they got it wrong. So they ran back. When they ran back, the other teams in the alliance just went up without knowing all the information and stood at the place and were allowed to stand there until they got it right. They never went back. So it took them forever, but the other teams could not come back in and beat them. There was no way for the other teams to beat them. So it's kind of like a similar, but it's a similar thing of like the dilemma of, do you go back to get further information, or do you not do that? And the two teams ended up being punished for going back to get further information. And that's kind of not that deal.
Wait, so only one team could do the thing at like one time?
Three at a time. And all three in the alliance were there, and they wouldn't move.
So they just kept trying over and over again.
Over and over again. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. There's something to talk about on a podcast right there. Because I always said Amazing Race, there's very little strategy. It's just.
Yeah. Well, if you want to listen to our Amazing Race podcast, it's over there. That's why I couldn't believe I was saying it to you as you're talking about this. But it didn't seem like that was purposeful. It felt like it was more of Aaron just didn't understand how to use the walkie.
No. I'm saying that's kind of where I thought this was going. It would be like a twist mid-challenge where the location that their map is leading them leads them out of walkie range. Instead, I guess Aaron accidentally switched channels. I mean, I don't know. That's, to me, that's not as interesting as Aaron being able to communicate with Rob. And like any challenge like that, you should tell the players, hey, we're going to be on channel four, whole channels on channel, you know, or like Aaron, Rob, you're on channel four. Just know that if there's any problems, make sure you're on the right channel, and just, you should brief them to like, know how to use whatever tech or prop that you're giving them. And I mean, it ended up being, you know, a failure like that. It ends up being a good story anyway. It's interesting. And then Rob comes back and we hear that Nick is staring out, and Stephanie says the $5 million case is this one. And Nick goes like, damn, Rob took the $5 million case. Rob runs back to Aaron. Aaron goes, no, you have the $3.75 million case. And at that point, we're very unsure of who is reading the map incorrectly or like what is really going on. And this is why I didn't really like the challenge last week, because we didn't have this moment of let's everyone bring their cases back and then these slow reveals. Like, these reveals are better reveals than the reveals in the final Deal or No Deal game at the end of the episodes.
They are.
And this here was when Rob flips it and goes 5 million and puts them right in the middle where they don't want to be. We're going like, what happened? And Aaron's like, how does that pop? You know, that suspense there to me is what these challenges, they have this very, very solid ending. Most of them do, where they, whatever game we play to get these cases, we're now standing in front of them and we're revealing them. They have actual consequences in terms of who's going to be eliminated, who's going to play Deal or No Deal, all that. And that was completely missing from last week's episode, and it would have made for a better challenge.
I agree. What was Stephanie's deal during this challenge?
What do you mean?
Wasn't she the one who wouldn't tell them what the information was, or was that Jordan?
So I think it was, well, Stephanie like was refusing to work with.
Yeah. Why wasn't she willing to work with
Jordan? Because they were saying, we just want to get immunity for ourselves at this point. Like, Rob,
is that going to bite them in the butt here?
It really could, but I think from Stephanie and Nick's perspective, or no, sorry, was it Stephanie and Nick?
I don't remember what the teams were. Wow, this is how much.
There's only six players left, and there's three teams of two. Like we are, it was Amy and Jordan, I believe, and it was Stephanie and Nick.
I think
right. Stephanie and Nick, their thought process was, hey, let's just go for the highest case values as quickly as we can. And then that means Rob and Aaron are either going to be the losers that will have to go play Deal or No Deal, or they'll be in the middle and we don't have to play. Our alliance members will play. And if they win, they knock out Rob or Aaron. So as long as Rob and Aaron don't get first, we will be able to, you know, have a chance at least of eliminating them. And then, so that was their goal. And then, so when Jordan's talking to Stephanie, like, what are we trying to do? Stephanie didn't want to look at her and say, hey, we're going for the top cases. We're going for immunity. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why she was kind of hush hush about it. And then Jordan's trying to, once Jordan has the steal and Jordan Amy, they're like, well, can you guys talk to us? What are we doing here? And everyone just stays silent. So they steal the case from their allies, basically sending them to the top because they stole the case and they gave their alliance members a smaller value case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was a little surprised, but I guess this is how comfortable the Night Owls feel with each other. Because they're willing to kind of like say, no, we're playing this challenge selfishly, and you're still not gonna pick us to be the ones that if you were to lose Deal or No Deal tonight, or I mean win Deal or No Deal tonight, you're still not gonna pick one of us to go home. Because I thought for sure this could have bit Stephanie, and then especially at the end of the episode when she's arguing with Rob and Rob. Going back to his God-tier gaslighting, which is one of our famous TikToks now. I mean, people love that shit. But he is just going back to his gaslighting of, oh, Stephanie, stop being like this. You're being so ridiculous. I've never lied to anybody. I've never done this. And
Stephanie did basically lie to Nick that like totally. And I actually think Rob did an amazing job, and he wasn't really gaslighting because he was being honest in this situation. And when like looking at Nick, like, hey dude, like Stephanie's completely making this up. Amy's making this up. I have not targeted you. Like, I don't know what they're talking about. And it did put it into the audience's head slightly. And Rob even says, no, I'll still go home. But like, if Nick had won, is there a chance that he would eliminate Stephanie? Mm-hmm. Very unlikely, as Rob said, but it did put a little bit of doubt that, like, wait a second, is this alliance going to fall apart? Because we'd already seen Jordan have questions about Stephanie and why isn't she communicating with me during the challenge? And if those thoughts are starting to come up, especially we've heard Stephanie being self. I remember everyone wants Rob out, and she's like, no, it has to be Alyssa, and she's like playing for herself and her selfish reasons and her own vendettas. That it would have make total sense, and maybe this is something we still see down the line, that the Night Owls kind of self-implode and they take out Stephanie before they take out Rob or Aaron, because Stephanie has played such an outwardly selfish game. And not that selfish is a bad way to play this game. I think a lot of these shows, you have to be more selfish than you realize if you want to win. Mm-hmm. So it's not knocking Stephanie. It's just that she has been very open about doing what's best for her. And so if Nick really did pull the trigger on Stephanie, it wouldn't have been one of these things that comes out of left field. It would have been fun to see.
Mm-hmm. Let's throw up this comment here. Brett Cott. I also like the earlier episodes where there were more players. These latest episodes feel so stale because the structure of the game has not been changing. We need a bigger cast for season two. What do you think about this?
I don't know. I feel like this cast was not big at all. What do we start with? 11.
I think it was 11.
So like, that's a pretty small cast. And I still feel like we have not gotten to know the cast that well, which is crazy.
Do you think that this is a format that can benefit from a larger cast? Can it manage to include everybody in the cast? Or is it a format that just does not fit a big cast? Like, is it people are just always going to be lost in the shuffle in a show like Deal or No Deal Island?
No, I don't think so. I mean, 11 is pretty small. I think if you go up to 12 or 14, you can't have any non-elimination episodes. You probably have to do some double elimination episodes. But I think Rob has been such a presence, and then Aaron also, that, I mean, that I think is, it's not really the format. It's just season one cast. Rob has been just lights out in confessionals. He understands the game. He understands what bites he needs to give the show. He's been good at challenges. He's been good at the strategy. Like, he is the narrator. He's the main character of the show. If you don't have someone as dominant of a presence, I do think you could have 12 or 14 people and distribute the screen time a little bit more evenly, and you get to know the players a lot better. But because we've had Rob and then Aaron to a lesser extent, but I mean, Aaron's probably, he's the clear second place to Rob here. But he's still not even that close to Rob. And that, if that's the case too, it's not like there's Rob and then everyone else is getting even amount. It's Rob, then it's Aaron, and then it drops off even more.
Then it's Amy for sure. Amy is there.
Right. But like, Amy is,
Amy's the only one I could see winning.
We're out of nine episodes into this thing, and I get that. Yeah, I get Amy's vibe, but I still barely know like that much about her or what she's been doing episode to episode. You know, we get it. There's an alliance called the Night Owls, and she doesn't like Rob, and that's it. It's not much depth. You know, there's not much like, so, which is fine, and we all love Rob. I think this is a great comment too from Brett also. The show is stupid and fundamentally rigged, but I enjoy it. The more Rob, the better. And that's, I think, the story of season one, that we love Boston Rob, and we love his relationship with Aaron, and we love that there's five people left, and those are two of the five people left. The consequence of that is that we haven't gotten to know the rest of the cast. The show feels rigged, and maybe the last few episodes, because we don't know that many people, and it feels like it's inevitable that Rob and Aaron are going to keep surviving because of the decisions the show makes with personal offers, with non-eliminations, with how many cases you choose in your Deal or No Deal game, or how many cases you even start with, that it feels a bit contrived at times. And that's a feeling that once you hit that, man, what am I watching? Like, is this just like, is this wrestling? Is this WWE? Like, is this kind of like predetermined outcome? And once you get that feeling, it's really hard to be like invested in, oh my God, I wonder what's going to happen next. What's the unpredictability? Because even if something crazy happens that is unpredictable, like, wow, Rob and Aaron survived this episode somehow and there wasn't a personal offer, you're like, okay, yeah, but what did they do to really pull that off? Oh, they read a map wrong and they messed it up. They didn't end up where they wanted to be. And then the guy who played Deal or No Deal made the biggest deal in Deal or No Deal history, yet somehow lost the game. It just is that, like, I don't know. It doesn't feel as like fulfilling, I guess. And not that I didn't enjoy this episode or haven't enjoyed this show, but I do feel like moving forward for a season two, that either need to cast all reality stars, like do what the Traitors did for season two and like get rid of these new people, like Jordan, Stephanie, like remember Miranda, Dawson, nope. Nick, like just, we don't, I mean, not that these have all been terrible casting decisions, but like, let's cast reality stars. You know, people are going to bring it. They're going to play hard. Make all the Deal or No Deal games work the same way. Like, why do we start with 20 sometimes? And why do we start with 12 sometimes, or 16 sometimes, or 14? Why are the values all over the place in terms of like the left side and the right side? I know we do get cases from the challenge. That's fun, I guess. But does that even really, oh my God, you got the 4 million instead of the 3.5 million. So that's the case that's going to go on the Deal or No Deal game. Do we care? Is that affecting the deal at Topper that much? Like, yeah, not really. No. You know, why is it, okay, you're going to select 8 cases on your first go, or sometimes you select 6. Like Nick here, there were 12 cases. He selects one case to start, case number 9. Now there's 11 left. On his first round, he selects 8 cases. That's not the same that everyone else got to do. He didn't have multiple rounds, okay? So why is the game always changing in these mounts? Like, you should have these variables fixed so it feels more real. And again, we've talked about this. I feel very okay with, you're going to go flip a coin, and if you win the coin flip, you're safe, and you get to eliminate someone else. If you lose the coin flip, you lose. I'm okay with that part. I'm okay that it's all luck. What I'm not okay with is that the rules are changing each week depending on who's playing the game. That's what feels really contrived.
Here's Zans. Yeah, why are people clapping for big numbers? It can all come down to 50-50. We're kind of like dumb toddlers clapping for big cases. I mean, I know.
That's
true.
And I totally agree. Because you,
and that's why I think there needs to be a threshold. I think a threshold would benefit this game significantly.
Or don't have the people like clap in a certain way or produce them to be excited about something that they shouldn't be excited about. Like, I roll my eyes when they're clapping for the cases because I'm like, all right, your alliance member is about to go home here. That's not good for your gain. You shouldn't be happy about this.
Yeah.
Like the case values, the size of the deal made, we know doesn't matter as long as it's above what's in the case. But if it's a $4 million deal or a $2,000 deal, the $2,000 deal could keep you in the game if your case is 1 cent or $1, $100. Okay. Your $4 million deal can send you home if your case is $4.5 million. And the show needs to do a better job of owning that. It's like we're dancing around it. Like, let's clap for the big money. Yay. Clap for the big money. Oh, 1 cent.
Yeah. Show Rob being all sad up at the top.
Yeah, it's like the players know what's going on. They know how this game works. They know the numbers. They're always like, Aaron, the accountant, can you help us out here? It's like, guys, we are dealing with rudimentary probability.
Yeah.
And I think the show needs to do a better job of owning this mechanic instead of like feigning that these dollar amounts are like that exciting when it really comes down to like, all right, how many cases are left? Where's my case? You know, let me look at the percentages.
I do feel like what's going to end up happening in season two is we're going to see a lot of the similarities for a lot of the stuff that we've complained about in this episode. I think first we are going to get probably one or two reality TV stars cast who are going to eat up pretty much all of the screen time while they're there. I think that could really hurt the season because we have not actually seen what an episode of Deal or No Deal Island would look like without a superstar. So how would that work if that one or two superstars went home in the first two episodes? Maybe it's not possible. We don't know. And then I think the other thing is, I don't think they're really going to change much of the format with Deal or No Deal at the end here, because that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to clap for big numbers and you're supposed to be sad. Are you supposed to be sad about big numbers and clap for low numbers? I think that's what we're going to see. I don't know how
it's
they just,
it is. It's exactly what Zan said. Like, it feels like we are toddlers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we feel like the show makes you feel stupid, or it treats you like you're stupid, that you're not seeing what the real point of the game is. And just own
it, though.
Just own the mechanic. Like, don't lie. Mm-hmm. Don't have the players react and lie.
Yeah.
And I know there's, again, if we knew what was going on with the final case, and that was the value and the real money value of that was so like influential here, then hey, maybe they are really giving authentic reactions of like, yes, we need the $4 million. So we can add it to the case, but like, we don't know how that final case even works. We don't. So who knows? Maybe that will help.
All right. Well, last thing, and then we can end this one here, but who do you think is going to be the final person playing against the dealer? If you had to make a guess right now.
Don't even. Like, it's going to be Aaron.
You think it's going to be Aaron?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's either Aaron or Amy. I don't think Rob will get there. I think he'll be just short. And it can't,
I think Rob's going to come up short. I think they can't. If Rob wins the first season, it will just be like, okay, well, they rigged it for Rob.
Yeah.
Because they already have been rigging it for Rob. And now if he wins, people will look into it more closely. And then it will become more obvious and the show loses all credibility, where if Rob doesn't end up being the winner, it's like they can get away with the rigging that kept him in the show for a long period of time, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I think it's going to be Aaron as well. I do. And I think Rob gets a big enough paycheck for this show that he doesn't really care if he goes and plays it at the end. So,
right.
All right. That's all I got for Deal or No Deal Island episode 9. You good?
I feel pretty good. Did we cover the Stephanie Rob battle at the temple enough? I mean, we went into how maybe it would have influenced Nick. I don't think it was actually going to. They were doing what they do. I don't know if we need to break it down.
I
do like when we get into these kind of battles at the temple. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's been a good thing to come out of these last few weeks, at least, is like the conflict between the cast members. They're not all just sitting in their camp in chairs in the ocean talking about like, woo, yay.
Yeah. So totally agree with that. 100%.
We're the night owls. Woo, hoo, hoo, woo, woo.
Which drives me insane. Ugh, don't like it. Anyway. Okay. That's it. Thank you all so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed this episode. You know, I think we only have 3 episodes left of Deal or No Deal Island. So we'll see how that ends up closing out. Become patrons, patreon.com/specialist. We got nothing going on for Deal or No Deal Island over there, but we got some fun stuff. Otherwise, Survivor Thailand for you top tier patrons. Who doesn't want that for the next month? And that's it. Thank you all so much for listening. We'll see you next time. Like the video, subscribe to the channel.
See ya.